Here, I'll share my screen. Okay, so the main event for today is this question, is this question of compensation ex post facto for preventing a poel from eating while he's working for the Baal HaBayis. That's what I want to start off with today. The reason why I find that to be an interesting question, obviously it's an important, just factual, legal, halachic question in and of itself, but the reason why I find this question to be particularly important, anybody want to tell me why it seems to be important? Why is it an important question?
Well, we might say that if we say, is it a monetary claim, right? That he, like a real, does he have some sort of bilis on the claim? Then that would imply that he should be paid back if it wasn't. Whereas if it's just specific to that moment of tsar, then maybe you missed the boat.
Good. I want to actually remain a little more neutral on that substantive issue as to exactly what it shows. But in the broadest, in painting it in the broadest sense, I want to say that whether or not restricting the poel's right here gives rise to a duty to compensate is going to shed light on the nature of the poel's entitlement to eat. So I think that's the broadest way to pose the question. We'll see, I think, two different ways of cashing out that the nature of the entitlement. Good. Is that clear? That's the agenda. So the agenda is we want to look at the chiyuv tashlumin in limiting the poel's right or in violating the poel's right to figure out what's the nature of the poel's entitlement in the first place. That's the agenda for part one of today. Good plan? Yeah, good. So we have the Gemara on Peches and Bey. I'm just going to talk about this part very quickly because some of this we saw. The Gemara says, the Torah says, Kisava b'kerem reyecha, v'yachalta anavim k'nafshecha savecha. Chazal darshan k'nafshecha to mean ma nafshecha im chasamta pater, af poel im chasamta pater. That's the language of the Gemara on Peches and Bey. Of course, pater here is an ambiguous term. What might pater refer to?
I just mean the patur from the Isser or from the Chiyuv Malkos or something like that.
That's right. We don't know whether Pater here is about the Chiyuv Malkos or whether it's about Tashlumin, but we have the Gemara's broad statement. And it sounds like we have Machlokas Rishonim. The Ritva here says, Im Chasamta Pater, Mi Malkos, Ela Shechayev Leshalim, Ma Shehaya Ochel. Okay, so he thinks that there's a duty of compensation. And he cites Chosem Esapara Mishalim Arba Kabin. He cites the Mishnah, the Bryce that we'll talk about later on, which says that if you're Chosem Apara, you have a duty to allow the thing or remunerate the owner or remunerate the para. It's not clear in the Gemara actually which one of those it is. You got to pay a certain amount of money, Arba Kabin. You'll see Rashi there says that's just Chazal's estimation. I'll just mention it here quickly. That's Chazal's estimation about how much the animal would have eaten. Tan Rabbanan, this is on Tzadi Aleph, Hachosim es ha-para v'dashba, loke mishalim arba kavim l'para, u'shlosha kavim l'chamor. Rashi says, kach shi'aru chachamim achilaso. That's how much Chazal estimated it would have eaten. And so the Ritva says, by analogy, and again, this is just a theme throughout the sugya that there's this connection between chasimas para and chasimas poel. By analogy, if you're chosei masa poel, chayev l'shalim masha haya ochel. So 2 points, right? A, there's a duty to compensate. B, the amount of, the measure of damages is masha haya ochel, right? What the poel would have eaten. Good. The tour has this idea of citing the Rama. If you're chosei, he says over here, im chosmo shelo l'achol patur, Davka le'inyan malkus, aval isura ika. I think that's important. There is an isser. I'm interested to know what this isser is. What isser are you violating? V'chein kasav harama, v'im chasim le shalom idaito shlumim mishalim. So the Rama also thinks there's a duty of compensation, and it sounds like the tour thinks there's some isser, though he doesn't tell us what the isser is. Just there's no malkus. Same in the Shulchan Aruch and the Sma here. imports this idea that the measure of compensation, the amount shlumin mishalim, is kashir shahaya ochel, the amount that the poel would have eaten when he was working. Now the Minchas Chinuch and the Chizkuni both dispute this idea that there's tashlumin. Minchas Chinuch has a diak in the Rambam. He says the Harambam lo kasav chiyuv tashlumin al bal abayis lepoel mashahaya rashai lechol. So for the Rambam, who doesn't state anything about compensation, nira de ein tzarech l'shalim de hayel l'farish. You know, the Rambam really should have told us that there's a chiyuv tashlumin if he thought there was. The fact that the Rambam doesn't say anything about it suggests that the Rambam denies a chiyuv tashlumin. I don't know if anybody here have thoughts just on, you know, methodologically, that's a valid inference, the valid diak that the Minchas Chinuch is making. Evan, it looks like you unmuted.
Okay. I think, like, even if he doesn't include it, by the fact that the Rambam says, you know, mitzvah lahaniya, seems to imply that, okay, and if you don't, you have to, like, you have to compensate. Like, it's, you could make just like a kind of inference from the Rambam's mitzvah lahaniya that maybe you would have tashlumin, and it's not necessarily such a cold case that just, or such a obvious thing, sorry, that just because Rambam didn't say anything doesn't mean we don't have tashlumin here.
Yeah, fair point. You know, you could say, analogous to what Evan's saying, Torah says v'heishev es hagzela, doesn't have to, the Rambam doesn't have to tell that in each case of, you know, of wrongful taking. So, you know, it's an interesting argument whether the Rambam should have said something if he thought it applies.
I thought methodology is totally strange. Like, the Rambam is not going to talk about cases that don't come up in the Gemara. The case of paying the poel because you are chosim him is just not talked about. So, like, I don't know. I think this diak says more about the Minchas Chinuch than the Rambam.
Yeah, it could be. It's a nice diak. You know, the Rambam tends to stick to the Gemara's formulations rather than, you know, talking about new kinds of cases. I think, you know, Dr. Graf used to make, like, the observation, you know, if you read the Rambam, you would never know that the halacha progressed from, like, the Bavli. Whereas if you read the Kitzer Svarim of the Bali Atosos, there's all this, like, you know, interesting cases and, like, new theories that are coming out of there. Whereas when you go back to the Rambam, it's just like, oh, the Bavli restated, very nice. Now he says, you would never know about the revolutions in France and Germany of the 12th and 13th centuries. Yeah, so it could be more about, like, dark air, like the Derech of the Rambam. That's a good point. Gabe, you had a comment on this?
Yeah, Kira and I had a different reading of this. I'm trying to figure out if it's still plausible. We thought Hayel Lefarish was referring to the Poel. The Poel should have explicitly stated his terms, and the Chiyuv Tashlumin is only translatable or enforceable if it's part of the contract.
Cool. It's interesting.
I don't know. I can't tell if that was our only reading, but I can't tell if it's plausible.
Interesting, yeah. Definitely not the way I read it. Dehayelo lafarish. So there's an ambiguous subject over there, right? Who's the pronoun? Hayelo lafarish. I just think this it's the Rambam, right? Because the subject of this whole thing is the Rambam lo kasav chiyuv tashlumin abayis lepoel mashahaya nira dein tzarech l'shalim dehayelo lafarish. So yeah, I guess you're saying that maybe here he's switching to the poel. Interesting.
Gabe, what's the, even leaving aside the ambiguous, like the ambiguous low, like what's the svara to say, like clearly this, whatever the reshus of the poel is not built into any sort of pre-stipulated requirement. Like it's a xeris akrasiv that like the poel can eat. So what would be the svara to say that, okay, naniach, but you don't need a stipulation in order to have the right in the first place, but somehow a stipulation is what guarantees you tashlumin afterwards, and absent that stipulation, you don't have, your claim isn't strong enough for tashlumin.
Yeah, because the pasuk is only creating an obligation or a duty on the baal bayis not to be chosid nepoel. That doesn't necessarily translate into a chiyuv tashlumin. In order to translate that into a monetary value, you'll need to be more explicit in your terms.
Okay, well, this is just a question about the reading. It sounds like in the substantive halachic outcome, we're in agreement that the Minchas Chinuch thinks, the Rambam thinks that the right of the poel doesn't generate a duty to compensate automatically. it would have to be like a separate provision agreed upon. So in Lumdis, I think we're on the same page. Just the question is that methodological issue that Evan was noting, flagging. Is the idea that the Rambam should have been mefarishier, or like is he's not, Minchas Chinuch's not making that kind of diak, he's just saying the Poel would have had the duty to contract this in.
Yeah, Itamar, I think Gabe is right. The referent of Lo is obviously the Poel. I don't see any argument to say that the referent of Lo is the Rambam. Ayla lefarish means he should have said explicitly, I mean, Nira de'ein sarich l'shalim, there's no need for the, I mean, it's sarich l'shalim, deh, right? Which is just, you know, for, meaning in virtue of the fact that, hayalo lefarish, the Minchas Chinuch wrote this sloppily because the subject of the verb l'shalim is the balabayas and the referent of lo is pretty clearly the poel, but that doesn't bother me so much. I think Gabe's reading is obviously correct.
No, but what's the, you're saying he's making some sort of huge, like, chiddush that, oh, that if the, that if there's something in the contract the Baal Bias didn't have to give, then he's coming to let you know that the Baal Bias has to pay the thing that he said he was going to pay. There's no chiddush.
I'll just add, in my Machon Yerushalayim and Kaskinov over here, in the footnote it says, they're quoting a Yehuchim Fishel Perlau in the Grip, and he says, "Aval midivrei Rambam ein raya she'ein darko lichto b'sifro dinim she'einam nimtzayim b'feirish b'divrei Chazal," which is Zechariah's point, but that just shows that Rabbi Ruchem Fishel thought like he wasn't going with Gabe's reading, right, Gabe? Which is fine, you know.
Cool. But, what I'm saying is, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. But as it sounds like it's not, I think a Yehuchim Fishel is reading the Minchas Chinuch the way I read it, not the way Gabe and Yakir read it, right? That's fine. I'm not saying that a Yehuchim Fishel is automatically right, you know? Maybe he has expertise in reading Rasag's poem, doesn't he?
I think it's more accurate to say that Cole is automatically wrong when it comes to grammar. At the risk of, like, quoting my dad, he once told me he can't always be wrong, but somehow Cole has managed so far to always be wrong.
Wait. Your father was talking about me?
I agree with Adin and Itamar. I agree
that your father once said that about me?
No, he once said that about himself. I'm just applying it to you. But
okay. I feel as if your father and I are on good terms, and I haven't done anything to deserve that credit.
But he did not say that either. I just think that I know you were trying to fetch the grammar, but I think if you like take a step back and think about like which one is more sly, right? Like if the Minchas Chinuch is talking about the Poel and he's being mechadish a very kind of like unique reality in this, in the functionality of this essay, and you would think that he would do it with more than a hanging pronoun.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
I don't understand. Well, okay, that was.
It's okay. I don't think we need to litigate so much.
Yeah, I don't care what the Minchas Chinuch thinks.
Yeah.
How about that?
So right now, I think it's interesting, Shita, whether you go with whichever reading you go on in the Minchas Chinuch, whether my reading or Gabe's reading, it sounds like they think that the Rambam does not think there's a duty to compensate against the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and the Tur. And in that footnote in the Chinuch, they also point us, the Rabbi Yehuchim Fishel Perlau points us to the Chizkuni al Torah, really great diak, good find. The Chizkuni also seems to deny, the Chizkuni is Bali Tosas al Torah, he denies a duty to compensate when you violate the Poel's right. So he said, he quotes Rashi, lo sachsam shor b'disho, perish Rashi, lehotzi esa adam, kilomar lepocho min halav, im chasmo, de'en ata muzer alav. So there's Israel lo sachsam, there's no Isser Chasimas Poel. But the Chizkuni wants to know, why do you need that diyuk, lo sachsam shor b'lo adam? Typically, mi v'chalta anavim k'nafshecha sevecha, de'en aloke b'chasimas adam. Why don't we just cite our Gemara that there's no Isser to be choseim as a Poel? So why are there two separate limudim? To make a long story short, the Chizkuni argues you need both limudim because one limud is to teach you Ptur mi Malkus. Okay. So the first limud is to teach us that there's a Ptur Malkus, but the second limud is to tell us that there's also a Ptur Tashlumin. And that's why you need both limudim. So you actually get from the Chizkuni that, like the diak that the Minchas Chinuch has in the Rambam, against the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama, that according to him, there's no duty to compensate if you violate the Poel's right to Achila. Yoni, so actually 1 second. So what I want to take away from this, I want to figure out is, what's this machlokes about? Like, what's the disagreement about whether there's this duty to compensate? What does that tell us about the nature of this chus poel? Yoni, you had your hand up before. I take it you were going to make the diak in the note in the Minchas Chinuch, or no?
Well, I was just going to say that the Rambam himself, like, look at the Lashon, like, he clearly does address, like, probably the case. I mean, I guess, like, it comes out of methodology, Rambam, like, how much Rambam deviates from Gemara's in general. So we kind of, like, readdress.
Yeah. Good. So I want to say...
Can I make a very quick orthogonal point?
Sure.
Because I think Zolti got angry at me about this last time, and so I want to double down. I still don't understand the Hamamina that there's Malkus. Like to me, it's like basic level Einon Shem Minadin, and even without, like, definitely in the Rambam Einon Shem Minadin, probably even in the Ramban Einon Shem Minadin, and even like just throughout the Sugya, it's clear that they think it's Kal v'Chomer. So yeah, I still don't understand the Hamamina. And Minchas Chinuch's like, yeah, it's an essay. Obviously, you don't get Malkus, but he still feels the need to say it, which is very strange.
Yeah, it is very interesting. What's the Havamina here that there should be legitimate Malkus, right? Yeah, good.
Maybe it's not a Havamina that there's Malkus, just that you're over an Isser?
The Gemara, yeah, well, all these Rishonim are talking about Milky Lo Yilke, but that's the formulation they all have. I think even in the Shulchan Aruch, he had that formulation. Let's see. The Torah says.
I think it's clear that I'm missing something simple because all they're showing to say this. I just legitimately don't know what it is.
Isn't that an extension from Lotafsim Shor B'disho?
That's
a Kal v'Chomer. That's a Kal v'Chomer. It's Ein Onshin Min Adin. We never say Malkus from a Kal v'Chomer.
I think the answer to this question points to another oddity in the sugya, is that the Gemara assumes there's like a very seamless connection between between the poel and the shor that I think is probably stronger than a Kal v'Chomer or a Minadin. Like the Mishnayos lump them together as part of one spectrum, as if it's really the same halacha, which like answers to this question but raises a much broader question, which is like how can we do that? They're clearly two separate inanim, two separate Yisurim.
I agree with you in principle, and I think that maybe that's why I'm hung up on this question, because I think it does point us to some kind of understanding of the like fluidity of this losachsum spectrum. The problem I have with that is then all of the Rishonim and Achronim then use this as an out. They're all like, it's an essay, so you don't get Malkus, or it's like we have a drasha that tells us it's not losachsum. So like you have to pick a side, right? Right? The famous machlokas. At least the way people say it, I don't know if it's totally precise, but the Ramban in Sefer HaMitzvos thinks that the Rambam holds in Onshin Min Adin by any drasha, right? Not just Kal v'Chomer's, and the Ramban thinks it's only by Kal v'Chomer's. But like, either way, definitely in the Rambam, you would think that it's that no matter what kind of like of the Yud Gimel, like whatever of the Gimel you choose to learn this out from, you're going to still run into that problem.
Yeah. So I want to say two things here to explain this machlokas. Let's get Evan's hand in first. And then I want to give two different ways of understanding the machlokas about whether there's a duty to compensate ex post facto. Evan?
Okay, so hot take, could the Malkus come from Tzar Bal Yochayim? Saying the Havamin of all this is that not just that's a Kal v'Chomer, but that actually both Tafsum Shor, right, muzzling your shore and muzzling your worker would both be Tzar Bal Yochayim that would generate Malkus. And then the whole Limud is telling you actually really not, right? The whole neat. So that was sort of what I was thinking, but it's not so good, but it's a thought.
I think that's close to what Gabe was saying, right? That there, it's, you know, it's really
right, yeah, exactly.
The assumption that there's right. one din going on here. That's how
right. I there's really it's really one din of Tsar, but it's being broken down into different cases in the Gemara, and I think the Kal Vachomers that going through really are like they kind of just all wrap around themselves in a sense.
Yeah, good point. Let me get these two points out here, then we'll take more comments on this. So I think there are two ways to understand this machlokas. The first way I think we'll go back to the discussion about what kind of right does the Poel have in the Peiros? And you remember we distinguished between a Hofeldian claim right and a Hofeldian liberty. A Hofeldian liberty just means that the Poel's under no duty to not take from the Balabais, like literally a suspension of the Isser Gezel. That's all it amounts to. We saw two formulations along these lines. You know, the Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos, Lios HaSachir Ochel, you read that as a permission, right, that the Poel should be able to eat. And then again, in the Koteret, Sheyochal HaSachir Minam B'chubar, right, a license that the Poel has to eat. And I think if we interpret the Poel's right as a mere Hofeldian liberty to mean he's under no duty to not eat, but there's no correlative obligation on the Baal HaBayis at all, it's just a pure Hofeldian liberty, then violating the Poel's liberty is not going to give rise to a duty of compensation. Because all it is a suspension of the Isser Gezel in the first place. As the Zohar Arikia said, She'ein ha-kasa medaber ela b'poel shehu mutar, ve'ein b'zeh mishum gzela shel Baal HaBayis. If the entire din here reduces to a heter and that's not considered a shem gezel, then okay, there's no duty to compensate for interfering with his ability to not steal, right? It's a pure license. Like if we're at a wedding together and we all have liberty rights to eat from the shmorg and I grab all the sushi before Cole gets to the sushi, I haven't violated his right. I don't have to give him more sushi. I had no duty in the first place to allow him to eat the sushi. So if that's the kind of thing that the Poel has, then it wouldn't give rise to a duty to compensate. Whereas if there's something stronger, if there's a kind of claim right that the Poel has, which correlates with a duty that the Baal HaBayis has to allow him to eat, to provide him with the means to eat, etc. So if the Zechus Achilas Poel is a Hofeldian claim right, then you might say that the Baal HaBayis breaches his duty when he interferes with the Poel's claim right to eat. And I think that has some support in the Rambam's formulation in Mishnah Torah, where he says, Hare al Baal HaBayis mitzvah sheyaniach osan lechol mima she'ein osan. Right? It sounds like there's some duty on the Baal HaBayis to allow the Poel to be ochel. And so if that's interpreted as like a Hofeldian claim right with a correlative duty in the Baal HaBayis, you might say that the Baal HaBayis, when he breaches his duty by being chosem the Poel, that generates a secondary duty of compensation. Does this sound plausible? I think that's one nice way of explaining the Chakira, explaining the Machlokes of Tashlumin. It depends on whether the Poel has a claim right to be ochel, or which correlates to the duty on the Baal HaBayis, or whether he has a mere liberty, which is just a heter on the otherwise Isser Gezel. Good, so you see Hofeld, I know Yakir and Zolti last year, they wanted to reserve judgment on whether Hofeld actually helps us in analyzing these things. I think I made good on my promissory note about 12 months late, right? I think Hofeld does clarify in this sugya. All right, let me think about that point for a minute. Anybody have comments on this part, on this answer, before we get to the second answer I want to offer?
Itamar, it's in the chat, because, like, don't worry about it now. I don't think it's...
Okay. Zolt, do you have a hand on this?
Or, I was going to say, I agree that the language, it took, as I said, like, it took 12 months to get the usefulness of Hofeld. Here it definitely does help. I think the problem, though, is that, well, it helps, like, differentiate, like, why, like, differentiating liberty versus, like, claim rights. You have to also explain kind of like why you believe that you have a liberty or a claim rights. Like you still have like another level of explanation that's missing.
Correct. But you know, we try to make progress in baby steps. We don't need to solve all the world's problems at the same time, you know. So.
Well, I'm just saying like there are multiple ways potentially to explain. Like I think part of the work is explaining. Like I think like you know, you only have the job. Like, most of the job relates like why would be a liberty right or why would be a claim right.
I think so. Good. I thought Ramosha said what hath Britain brought, right? Our job is to describe and clarify the what's, not to...
Yeah, but you haven't explained fully the what. You haven't explained like what the nature of the mitzvah is, which therefore arises in the liberty or arises in a claim right.
Okay. Hold off on that for a minute. Hold up. I see you're saying you want more, right? You're saying you're not satisfied by this kind of just descriptive analysis.
Yeah, like you just described, I kind of described it, like in like, you know, good, useful terms.
You want to know the ruts on a boat.
Zolti, all explanations are just descriptions.
Sure, but you've only described partially then.
That's true. Let's take Adin's hand, and we'll move on to the second.
Yeah, so there's like I think there's two like things I'm working through that I think might be related, but might not be. So the first is that do either of those two, which I agree with the two different routes that we could take, which could explain this machloket. Do either of them touch at all on the havamina of Malkos? I think like maybe you could say the duty, like the side that frames it more as a duty could come close. Like if we don't want to go down the shua path in the chat of like, opening up the can of worms of like this is a lav shabachol, so this is or own shemina did or something like that. Could we say that the pasuk originally didn't really sound like a lo tase, but like framed more as a duty of on the bala baya, there could be more idea for like a punishment for infraction. But maybe that doesn't make
okay. Yeah,
that might not make any sense.
I definitely see that point. You're saying if there's a havamina malchus, that certainly leans in the direction of a duty on the Baal HaBayis, right? That's the only way for there to be Malkus in the first place. I think that's true. But then once the Gemara torpedoes that and says there's no Malkus because of Kenav Shecha, is there some duty remaining, right? Like, and is there still like that, like the Rambam's language in Mishnah Torah? Or no, once that's torpedoed, there's no duty at all. And all it is, as Zohar Rakia says, it's a heter on what would otherwise be Geza. So yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. I think you're right.
Okay.
You know, and I guess this gets back to the prior discussion. How serious is that Havamina about Malkus? Yeah.
Fair. Yeah, so the other thing is, I think it's connected a little to what Evan said before, is that like the, like framing this as a Tzar Balei Chaim thing, like oh, that's why there's a Havamina for Malkos. Like, have we raised the possibility that this is some form of Nezek? Like bring the Chi of Tashlumin into some, like, you don't get Malkos, like I'm pretty, from what I remember from Avakai, you don't get Malkos for Chovel B'Chaveira. Like, you don't, like, for causing pain to someone, or for causing Ramach injury.
Okay, I'll hold off again for a second on that. I think what you're getting at is going to touch on the second answer that I want to get at.
Okay. Okay.
Good. So hold off for 1 minute, please, on this. So the first answer is just as Yoni complained. Where's Yoni? Yoni, where'd you go? There he is. Yoni complained that the first answer is like too descriptive. The second answer, I think, slightly different. And I would say that the second answer that I'm going to suggest could acknowledge that we're dealing with claim rights with a correlative duty in the Baal HaBayis, right? Like the Rambam's formulation of Mishnah Torah. So we're in claim right land, But whether or not a breach of that duty to ensure that the poel could eat gives rise to a secondary duty of compensation is going to depend on how we conceptualize the primary duty that the balabais has to ensure that the poel could eat. What's like the conceptual nature of that obligation? And I want to draw from this distinction that the Ramban raises in Dina de Garmi, right here. We, the Bava Kamma crew, should remember this from Bava Kamma days. Does anybody remember this Dina de Garmi or have a chance to look at it before Seder today? Zacharia, you got it?
Yeah. So in short, he kind of distinguishing between two different categories of kind of mitzvos, like Eidos Mammon, he groups with Hashavas Aveda and Tzedakah as being mitzvos that are primarily midin gemilas chasadim, and therefore, which nevertheless the Torah has obligated you to do, but nevertheless, if you fail to do it, that doesn't obligate you in any monetary responsibility. On the other hand, things like nezek, even like nezek al dei kalayim or nezek passively, which intrinsically is some sort of chiyuv or din mamon, that we will be more comfortable obligating you.
Yeah, excellent. I think this is the Ramban at his best. Just very clear conceptual analysis and distinctions. Ramban says, he's bothered by this question that the Bali Tosos are bothered by, a lot of the Shonar are bothered by. Why is it that if you fail to build a wall separating your kerem from your neighbor's sadeh, and then your vines grow into it and are mazik it through creating kalayim, there the Gemara says you have a chiv tashlumin. But, so it's your omission, right? Your omission, your failure to build a wall or to repair the wall generates a chi of tashlumin. But when it comes to your omission to testify for a friend, right, who needs your testimony to prevail in litigation, there your omission doesn't generate a duty of compensation. So in both cases, it's an omission. In both cases, you had some sort of a duty. In the Karim case, you had a duty to build a wall. In the Haggadah Eidos case, there is a duty to testify, right? Imlo yagid v'nasa avono. In some cases, the breach of duty gives rise to chiyuv tashlumin. In some cases, it doesn't. And the Ramban wants to know what's the rule. Okay, so that's the background, right? Zacharia, that's the case. Now, I just want to say the Rishonim have different things to say on this. The Meiri, for example, says the difference is that in the Gefanim case, your Gefanim are moving. So it's not really like an omission. It's like an act or something. Like you're acting because your property is acting. Whereas in the Imlo Yagid case, like you're just passive, right? You're refusing to testify. So that's like an omission. So a lot of Rishonim have other things to say about this. The Ramban's answer is exactly what Zacharia said. The Ramban said, it's true there's a duty in both cases, but in the case of testifying, the duty is grounded in the idea of gemilas chasadim. And he says, breaching your duty of gemilas chasadim is not strong enough to generate a chiyud mamon. The imlo rata l'kayim osa mitzvah ein min adin l'chayv o mamon. Masha einkin v'nis yayish haymenu v'lo gadra in the kerem case, Kivan shehu chayiv chiyuv mamon ligdor v'lo gadar chayiv sharehu maziko biyusha. So there you get this distinction between things that are what he calls chiyuve mamon and things that are chiyuve gemilas chasadim. Chiyuve mamon could generate secondary duties of compensation. Chiyuve gemilas chasadim cannot. And he reiterates the distinction here. Mi she'ena rotze lahayid pater, she'ena lav chiyuv mamon, ela mi derech gemilas chasadim. He thinks there's this ontological distinction between like different kinds of mechayvim in halacha. There are a set of mechayvim, a set of duties grounded in, you know, fraternity or extrarogatory conceptions of gemilas chasadim. Those primary duties can't generate secondary duties of tashlumim. He says those are like Lemaze doma, lemi she'ena rotze litein pruta mishalo la'ani she'en bezin mechayven osa bekach. They're einon bedin mamon. But he thinks there's a separate set that are grounded in chiyuvei mamon, the breach of which can generate a secondary duty of tashlumin. So I think that's a really important just distinction that the Ramban has. And then I think we could apply that to our case and say, look, maybe everybody agrees that there's a claim right that the poel has against the balabayas to eat. The balabayas has a karala duty to allow the poel to eat. But the machlokas at issue here is whether the duty, the claim right, is that a gemilas chasadim kind of a claim right, in which case it cannot generate a chiyuv tashlumin, or is it just, or is it more powerful, just like an entitlement, a property claim, like Shua was using earlier last week, in which case it's a din mamon, and a breach of that din mamon could give rise to a chiyuv tashlumin. Okay, and does anybody see how this second answer is different from the first answer? The first answer is saying, well, is this a claim right or is it a liberty right? The second answer is saying, let's grant that it's a claim right. We're interested in figuring out, is the claim right grounded in conceptions of gemilas chasadim or in this stronger category of chiyuvei mamon? Cole, you have a hand on this?
What's interesting is that I actually think the Ramban's distinction works much better in our case than it does in the Bava Kamma case, which is fine. We don't need to get into that. So let me tell me if you agree with what I'm about to say. So according to the Ramban's distinction here, if you take the view that the employer muzzling the worker would generate an obligation to compensate, so that would be like a second person offense against the worker, as opposed to just a failure to express the correct like state of character, which isn't something that you owe to anybody in particular. It stops with the act rather than the recipient or the addressee.
I want to say it slightly differently, actually. I want to say that these could be claim rights. So there is this interpersonal duty owed to the poel. The Ramban's point is that in order for that to generate a duty to compensate, a chiyuv tashlumin, the duty itself has to have a certain like modal strength. It has to have a certain force to it.
Yeah. So say a little bit more about what that is. I mean, the problem is that I was hoping to get away from that interpretation. I happen to think, by the way, that the Ramban's view so simply positing a distinction between
Cole, the early moderns would say there are perfect duties and imperfect duties.
Well, Kant has that language too, but was Kant an early modern in this case?
Yeah, I mean, he's borrowing from like Pufendorf and...
Right. Oh, is that right? Okay. These history of ethics people are... I can't do it. The history of moral philosophy bores me to tears. Anyway, what I would say about... the Ramban in this comment has labeled a problem without solving it. There's no reason in principle. Well, I mean, I would have thought if I were just looking at the cases, you know, you omit, and what the Miri says is interesting, but you omit to do something, you omit a duty, and someone else loses money because you omitted to fulfill your duty. In both cases, you should presumably compensate the person for the money lost by virtue of your omission of duty. So for the Ramban to just say, well, you know, you're not, you know, sufficiently attentive to the, you know, Gemilas Chasadim versus Dine Mamon, it's like, you know, Gemilas Chasadim is a placeholder for an account of why not testifying isn't a Chiyuv Mamon. The reason I put it the way I did was that one thing that would explain why somebody didn't have a claim on your compensation is if the chiyuv grounded wasn't a chiyuv, is if the duty, that you traduced by omitting to, you know, muzzle by you know, by muzzling the guy, by not muzzling the guy, whatever it is, wasn't actually a duty that you had towards him. It was just like an obligation to express certain virtues of character. As long as you owe somebody something, it's going to be very difficult to explain why you shouldn't owe them the money that they lost out on by you not fulfilling your duty. And which is why I think the Gemilas Chasadim, and actually the language of Gemilas Chasadim is like, is very nice for what I'm saying here. It's not so good for this. The, again, there are other, I mean, the best explanation
sounds, if I'm understanding you correctly, it sounds like you're basically reading the Ramban, you're reducing the Ramban to like the first answer that I was giving. Meaning, if it's just Gemilas Chasadim, it's not really a duty owed to the poel. It's just like a virtue that you, like in the Minchas Chinuch sense. It's like,
No, I don't think so. The first, I think it's different. The first answer you gave was that if you think that the poels, that the workers owed compensation, it's because he had a claim right. If you don't think he was owed compensation, it's not that the, maybe these are the same side of this, different sides of the same coin, but it's just that he had a weaker kind of right. Does that mean, I guess then the Balabais had a weaker kind of duty. It's not necessarily, that is a conceptual nafkamina actually, because in one case, the source of the halacha is the worker's weaker right, which generates a weaker duty. In the other case, it's the employer's weaker duty that generates the weaker right on the part of the worker. That is a distinction that we should, I think, keep alive, even if the, you know, everybody should read Kit Fine's paper, Essence and Modality, about the import. No, I'm very serious. It's what underlies the running machlokas between your father and Rav Schechter, that Rav Schechter believes that the modal facts determine the essential facts, whereas your father thinks that there are further conceptual facts once you've done the possible worlds analysis. Okay, we're now going to come back to Earth.
Thanks, Cole. Anybody else have a comment on this? On the Yoni, you have a comment on this?
Yeah, actually, could you like further explain, like I've been thinking about this, like how do you understand the difference? What is the meaning of a chiyuv of midin gemilat chasadim, which is a claim right? Like what's the significance of a claim right that can't be brought to Beit Din, can't be forced, can't be, like what is
the
significance?
The idea of a claim right is that you could bring it to Beis Din.
Well, you can't. That's the whole point of the midin. That's the point Itamar is suggesting.
The point is a duty is owed. A person has a chiyuv. There's a chiyuv to be made. You know, they probably violate an issur or something when they breach that duty.
So isn't that at that point like a, isn't that just like a duty towards like a kadosh baruch or something? It's not really a duty to the person.
Think about all these Grama Benazikin cases that are usur but pater. You know, there's a duty owed not to harm somebody. Just they're not enforceable you can't vindicate the right ex post facto. Maybe you could get an injunction lechatchila, right? Maybe you know, some achronim talk about this in Garmi cases. Maybe you have a right to be monea sanezek. But here we're just interested in whether it gives rise to a secondary duty of compensation. And the Ramban's answer is that maybe you violate an iser when you don't give the ani tzedakah. You wronged him in some way. But that's different from whether the ani has like this entitlement to compel you to give it to him when you breach your duty. That's the analysis.
Yeah, but the argument here is before he breaches his duty, like before you officially breach it, he's saying that you can't even bring him to din. To hive him to begin with.
Dama the Ramban or in our sugya?
In the Ramban, yeah.
No, the Ramban's talking about whether if you were harmed ex post facto by his not testifying for you, can you demand compensation? And the answer, and he says the reason why you can't is because there never was this kind of chiyuv mamon in the first place.
He compares it to the case of the kis shel chavero. Like, can you force someone? Can you bring someone to Beis Din to return your lost object?
Could you Beis Din force somebody to retrieve an object for somebody?
Yeah, not compensate for the loss, but to actually, the primary duty.
Maybe. I want to leave that possibility open. In the Ramban here, it's not totally clear. I mean,
because if it's not, I just don't understand what the significance of a claim right is.
Well, the significance of a claim right is that it gives rise to a duty in the other person.
But what's so the significance of a duty?
There might be a further question as to remediation, Zolti.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about remediation. I'm talking about
You're confusing three separate distinctions. One distinction is it a claim right or a liberty right? Nafkamina, whether it generates a duty in the other party. That's one distinction. Second distinction is, how is the right enforced, right? Is there a court that's going to enforce it? Could you enforce it on your own? Is there a self-help thing? Whatever, right? That's the second question, enforcement. The third question is, does breach of the duty generate secondary duties, right? And you could also ask, how are those secondary duties enforced? So for example, Locke says, in a state of nature, if somebody violates your rights, they take your stuff, you have a right to go after them. You self-help, right? There's no court that's enforcing it, but there's some self-help remedy.
So what confuses me is between the first two. What is the meaning of a claim right if it's unenforceable?
You're saying, what's the meaning,
the meaning of
any
right if it's unenforceable?
Right. It's just a separate issue, how society enforces it, and whether or not there's a duty there in the first place.
Enforcement assumes a right. That's an asymmetric relation. There's no mutual dependence.
Correct. Yakir, you have a...
Yeah, in bringing this Ramban to explain our machlokas about Tashlumin in the Achilas Baal case, are you trying to say that those who are mechayev Tashlumin in the Achilas Baal case are doing so midin garmi? Or are you saying that the Ramban's distinction here is relevant in cases beyond garmi cases?
The latter, yeah. I'm just using the Ramban to articulate this important, what I take to be this fundamental distinction in halacha. You know, it's like a prime as heftas and gavras and maisas and kiyams. Saying the Ramban here just articulates this important distinction between the set of duties that are what he calls chiyuve mamon and the set of duties that he calls gemilas chasadim. And his further point that only the chiyuve mamon duties could generate secondary duties of compensation. That's all I'm using the Ramban for. I don't think it's
okay. It's not clear whether he's saying that or he's just saying the more limited point that only the second category of duties can generate garmi compensations.
Interesting. Why do you think?
What kind of compensations would be generated if not that?
Well, I mean, we're saying that Achilas Poel is presumably not a garmi compensation. So these categories might not be relevant.
Oh, I see.
Oh. It's interesting. Although he talks about tzedakah, which just seems, unless his havamina is that there should be a chiyuv tashlumin mitam garmi for not giving tzedakah. See, I would think that's so out of the world of nezek. It's just a general question about the breach of which duties gives rise to a duty of repair or secondary duties of compensation. But it's interesting. It's interesting. All right. Gabe, it looks like you wanted to get a word in on this before. Gabe?
I'm with Cole that I found the Ramban's chiluk here, at least in the Bava Kamma context, somewhat unsatisfying. I found that when you sort of, it's neat and pretty and it sort of solves problems, but when you try and press the Ramban on why one is a chiyuv mamon and the other is a chiyuv gemilas chasadim, I kind of turned up empty.
Okay, hold on. First of all, you said it's neat, it's pretty, and it solves problem.
Yeah, no, so that's
a grand slam in my book. What more could you want from...
Well, it needs to be true also.
A Rishon gives you a theory, it's pretty and it solves problems, and you're still unsatisfied? What more could you want? You know?
Just want it to be MSTIC, you know?
MSTIC, yeah.
True also, right. Wow.
You want it to be true also. Gabe, get out of town.
The world's not enough for you, Gabe, you know?
Right.
Wow.
Just like, there are
it's neat, pretty, and it solves problems. That's not good. You know, Narban in his Hakdama to the Mochamos gives this like tripartite. He gives these three criteria that he thinks are like the measure of like good Talmudic analysis, and he says something like it's the.
Wait, where's the Hakdama to the Milchamos?
And it's published in the back, in like the beginning, in the before the Rif and Brachos. So there's this great formulation where he says, you know, what every person learning Gemara wants is that the theory should cohere with like the plain meaning of the sugya, like the coherence of the sugyos with each other. Im hogen haseichel anachon. Right, so it should cohere with the text. It should be conciliatory with like the sugya as a whole. And it should make sense to a rational mind, like Hogan Aseichel Anachon. And here, Gabe, you say that it's neat, it's pretty, it solves problems, and you still don't. So what are you upset about? What's the, sounds like you have a Zolti-esque kind of criticism here. That's like, but let's hear.
So I guess, like, if you take the two dinim we're talking about, so the Chiyuv Ligdor and the Chiyuv to give aegis, to defend your friend, I'm having trouble determining why one of them is Mugdara as Mamoni and the other one is in the world of Gnevas Chasadim. Both of them.
That's what I said.
Yeah, I'm with Cole. So all I'm doing is echoing Cole's criticism. And like,
speaking of echoing, could whoever is echoing stop echoing?
Am I echoing?
Someone's echoing.
Let me mute Cole and then try go. Gabe, does that work or not?
Am I still echoing?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, there's something with your mic, but it's fine.
Okay, fine. I'll dial in after I finish this point.
It's fine. It's not, if your audio is fine, it's not like Tekiah Shofar where a Kol Havara is possible, you know? It's this
Kol Havara.
Like the best defense for the Ramban is the clause after the underlined Sharehu Maziko Beyushal Bukfanohema Osrin Mugorim Ha'isr, that his Kfanos are what's being Gorim the Isr, but that's the other sheet that which you mentioned, which is that his property is actually causing damage, which moves away from this state of Mammon, the state of Mivas Masadim in this stage.
Yeah. We could go back and forth on the reading of the Ramban, but I do think, I mean, I'm pretty confident that the Ramban's laying out here these two sets of duties, the Chivei Mammon duties and the Mivas Masadim duties, and he's just saying only one of these gives rise to the duty of compensation.
I agree. I want to figure out how to define these chiyuvim so that we can apply them in other contexts. You can't just like draw a distinction and then just like say that it's true. You need to explain to me why one of them is chiyuvim and the other is chiyuvim of chasadim, not just by virtue of how we compensate, but in a more essential way.
Got it. So I think the Ramban would say something like along the lines of, well, if this is just expresses like a kind of achicha, fraternity, society thinks this shows like a virtuous character and caring about your other members of society. That's a gemilas chasadim kind of duty. If this is something much more, meaning maybe there's real harm involved, again, of course, you have to figure out what does real harm mean, or there's greater damage that results, this reflects like almost wrongful attitudes. Maybe that creates these chiyuvei mamon obligations. I agree. The Ramban doesn't go deeper in telling us here's exactly how to pick out this set of gemilas chasadim obligations, and here's the set of bona fide chiyuvei mamon obligations. I agree. And if you woke me up in the middle of the night and I didn't know this Ramban, I wouldn't have said chiyuv agadas eidos is gemilas chasadim. But I agree. But that just means the Ramban's got to do more work. You know, I think it's fine for us to appeal to this Ramban and to say, hey, Nachilas Paulim, what kind of chiv are we dealing with here? By the way, I don't want to, obviously we're going to talk about this more separately, but if you fast forward ahead to the Chakira that we already saw on in Poel Ochel Mishalo or Mishal Shemayim, you know, Rashi said that the Mishalohu Ochel is a Tosefes Schar, which sounds like, I would say, a chiv mamon, Chiyuv Mamon-esque, like there's some monetary claim, it belongs to that set of Chov Mamon, and if it's Mishal Shemayim, then it's Matnas Gemilas Chasadim, which belongs to the set of, right, the Gemilas Chasadim duties. So I actually think that this, actually in our sugya, the Zchus Achilas Poel is ambiguous enough that it could either fit into a Chov Mamon set or into a Gnes Chassadim set, as evidenced at least by Rashi's interpretation of Mishalo versus Mishal Shemayim. But I agree there'll be gray areas where it's hard to know. But Gabe, you wanted to follow up?
Yeah, I just think it's super notable that Rashi is viewing like Gnes Chassadim as a really broad category, the same way the Ramban is. That's not obvious whatsoever. That is
totally. I think that's like the Ramban's breakthrough insight here. The Ramban saying you have a lot of things that look like they're choshen mishpat halachos, not like where the Ramban, you know, I think he talks about hilchos avel. He talks about gemilas chasadim, right? Hachnasas orchim, bikur cholim, right? You would think that these choshen mishpat obligations are just, they're all chiyuvei mamon. And the Ramban's point, his brilliant insight, is that's not true. You got to scratch beneath the surface to determine whether they're actually gemilas chasadim halachos versus stronger halachos. All right? Good? Great. Yakir, is that a lingering hand or a new hand?
That's a lingering hand.
Okay. Great. So let's move on. I think this is a very good discussion. Not just because I got to vindicate our Hofeld, you know, 12 months later. That was very exciting for me. So let's move on here in our analysis. I want to ask a few more questions on along this line about the nature of the Poel's entitlement and whether that could generate Chiyuv Tashlumin. So first I want to just make a ara in this formulation of the Talmud Rashba on Pezayin and Mabez. The Rashba here is commenting on Kenaf Shechasevecha, that there's no Chiyuv Tashlumin for, or at least there's no Malkus for being close to Mesapoel. And he says, Yesh Chiluk Bein Adam Levehema. So we say, Ki Yoser Adam and Abehema Ayin. But, all right. But he says, Yesh Chiluk Bein Adam Levehema. Sheim Chose Mesapoel Kadesh Lo Tochal. Over below sachsam, about im mana sa adam shelo yochal ino over belav. Okay, notice he changed the formulation a little bit. In the Gemara, it just said that there's no malchus, and the Rishonim there just said there's no malchus. He says that there's no lav at all, which is an important formulation, I think. Kolomar pater mi malchus umi lav. So not only are you exempt from malchus, you're also exempt from the lav. Aval mikamakam aser lasos kein mishum gezel meachar shenasam lo akosav rishus lechol. And here I'm just like, whoa, what just happened? You tell me there's no lav, there's no malchus, but then you tell me there's an iser mishum gezel because the Torah gave him rishus lechol. So that threw me off. I'm just not sure what the Talmud Rashba is doing here. So there's Nisr Gezel. Is he thinking that? And then he says, because the Torah gave him Rishus Lechel. So if I deprive somebody of a Rishus, that could generate a Chi of Gezel, right? So if I grab all the sushi at the Shmorg before Cole gets to it, that could generate a Chi of Gezel? Wouldn't think so, right? The mere fact that you have a Rishus for something can't generate a Chi of Gezel. So I don't know what's going on here. Maybe somebody could help out.
Yeah. I was also kind of like, no one, I were kind of puzzled by this. I'm wondering maybe, I'm not sure how great this is, but the granted, and I think even the Talmud Rashba degree, you can't generate a chiyuv gezela from a mir rishus, assuming that the rishus is dafka. However, an isser gezela, as in an isser gezela, is actually kind of easy to generate, as in just any kind of barring someone from their monetary thing that they have a right to might be an iser mishum gezela,
but here we're talking about
block you from getting to the shmor, if I like box you out of the shmor, that might be an iser gezela, even if I honestly don't owe you anything.
Yeah, I think you're right. You'd have to say that, given his language, you'd be committed to the view that taking all the sushi before Cole gets there is kind of a gezel, right? Because you want, just unless his language is imprecise, right? He says, "Oh, the Torah gave him rishus," which is just a license. There you go. It's just a rishus. and there could be Gezel from interfering with Arashos. That's a very radical conclusion, right? Either that or he's not writing precisely enough.
I thought the whole point of a liberty right is that you don't have the thing yet. You can, like, I mean, one like back of the envelope way to express the difference between a liberty right and the claim right is that if I have a claim right against you people to my property, like the property's in my bank account. If I have a liberty right, it's not yet, which is to say the violation of a liberty right is preventing somebody from realizing a benefit, but it's not causing someone a loss.
Totally. I agree with you, Bo. I think the Talmud Rashba here as stated.
I think it's a nice way to express the difference.
Yes, totally. It's Zizachar to give a shout out to the Rabbi Bleich article, which we'll talk about in good time. It's kind of a wild article in my view. Kidarko Bakodesh. But this Rashba I think is just indefensible. Shua, you want to defend this Talmud Rashba?
No, not at all. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, like, what do you say that? What's the halacha in Monei Kiso Shel Chavero, right? There's a din that you can't, like, prevent a business opportunity. I don't think anyone would call that Gezel.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. I think what's going on here in the Chuvash Rashba, in the Talmud Rashba, is that he didn't read Hofeld, so he's using the word Rashus in a very loose way, and he really means...
Stole it from my mouth. I was going to say that.
There you go. Exactly. By Rashus, he must mean like the Zechus or like the Kenyan Apoel, and he's really thinking in stronger terms. But see, just another reason why it's important to read Hofeld carefully. Wow, I get two hits with Hofeld in one day. It's a good day for me.
I think the only reason you thought the Rashba was surprising and didn't read the Rashba that way in the first place is because you had read Hofeld. I think Hofeld has solved one problem and created one problem today and has now neutralized himself out.
Oh no. But I would say Yakir, Rashus clearly means permission. Right? I think it's bad use of the Hebrew language.
That's not true. My Rashus is my property.
I considered and then rejected that interpretation.
The Rashusi, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Rashus is a noun and Rashus as a verb is what Zachariah is saying.
Permission to.
That's right. I would say Rashus as in Rechush as a noun has the connotation of property, but a Rashus to.
I think it actually has the connotation of dominion.
Okay, Blackstone. Saying
this. Oh, is that from Blackstone?
Dominion, yeah. But that's interesting. But yeah,
I'm a son of the common law. I mean, you know, for me, the halakha is just totally foreign.
Okay. Yeah, Kerry, you agree with me that Rishus is a verb has this connotation?
I think Rishus has both meanings. I think that I agree the Rashba's use of it is a little surprising, but this is just a question of how surprised we are that he's wording himself this way when we agree what he actually means. So,
okay.
Isn't the problem though not the word Rashus, but the problem the Gezel, Mishum Gezel? And then clearly he has to hold that the Rashus Lechol is itself only a liberty because it says there's no over the law. I mean, I guess it depends on what you hold for the, as we explained, like the previous part. Like the two options, if you hold like the Ramban, I guess. But like, it sounds like a bigger problem is the Mishum Gezel, that he thinks that it's, that some reason it's us or Mishum Gezel, but yet there's no lav involved.
Right. Well, the point is you can have both, in my view, right? You can have Gezel and Rishus.
Well, it sounds like he also has to hold that Gezel can't be taken so seriously, because if there is a Gezel, then how is there no lav?
There's a lav of Gezel, there's just no lav of Los Oxum.
It sounds like he's saying more than that, though. It sounds like he's saying there's no love, any love.
No, I think he must mean Milos. I think the implied subject here is about the drasha of Los Achsum, and he's thinking that, because if there's Isser, what's the Isser? It's like an Isser Asay or something? But he says Mishum Gezel, so I take it that it's a love of Los Igzel.
It just has to be imprecise. What, like, do you think you're Mekayim Mitzvah HaShavah Sela if you pay him back afterwards? Like...
No, obviously not, right?
So, the Ramban literally says yes.
Yeah, we'll get to that, Shua. Yeah, we'll get to that, Shua. You walked into the trap. No.
Yeah, then I take it back. That maybe is precise.
But I think that Ramban's going to be, I mean, that Ramban raises, I don't think that Ramban is consistent with calling it a mere reshus, right? So, meaning something's got to go in the Talmud of Rashba. Yoni, it sounds like you're suggesting the Gzela thing has got to be lapped off, but these formulations I think are just so clear. The one thing that strikes me, the better thing to read out is reshus. All right.
Okay, then can I, I mean, maybe she goes to the Ramban so that I can see it, but I think that reshus is less of a problem then, because if like you, the corollary of reshus is the, like the kenaf shacha diuk, which to me is like, here's how are we like qualifying this halacha? We know that, that we like moved it outside of being a law of Malkos, but it's still like some form of mitzvah, right? So what is that mitzvah? It's not a chiyuv to eat. It's a reshus to eat. It's a like, whether, I mean, I don't know that there's a more precise word to describe that like property right.
Once you mean like the book?
That it's not an isser.
Yeah.
What's that?
He said, me'achar shezika lo akasav.
Okay, so, but.
And by the way, Shua, other Rishonim use that formulation explicitly, right? So there are other formulations out there.
The problem is Zika.
You're muted, Shua.
Yeah, I get it. And I think that like, you're right that there are alternatives. I just, like, none of them are perfectly precise, right? If I say Zika lo akasav, I think that even if he doesn't eat it, they're his, right? And, like, everyone agrees that if the guy doesn't pick the stuff and eat it, you're not over... Again, maybe there's some Ramban that disagrees with me on this, but
Tosabena Paris on that one, sure.
Okay, but like again, right? I think that you're walking a fine line between describing a schus in the thing, which is not what we would not say, like, but that you have to effectuate, right? Presumably,
yeah. Yes, I would just say, look, Shua, here the Ritva uses that formulation. Zika lepoel with respect to heter achila, so that language is used by the Rishonim in some contexts, but we'll see other formulations along those lines. Okay, so I want to come back to our discussion. I want to say something a little more, just to further characterize the kind of right that the poel has. I raised this question earlier in the other chaburas. So far, you know, we're talking about the Poel, what kind of claim does he have? We spoke about the Baal HaBayis, does he have a duty? What about a third party? What about like third party interference with the Poel's right? Is that problematic in any way or something like that? So you might say the Baal HaBayis has a duty. Remember the Rambam's formulation in Mishnah Torah was mitzvah Baal HaBayis l'haniach l'poel. Do some other parties also have some obligation to uphold or defend the Poel's right to zechus to eat, whatever it is? So I just thought it's noteworthy to mention briefly, we're going to talk more about this later on, is the Gemara in Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph, which says, Rabbi Elazar Chasma Omer, lo yochal poel yetzer al sfaro b'chachamim matirim. It's machlokes about whether it's permissible for a poel to eat more than he would have been paid for his actual labor. Right, so let's say he would be paid $50 for the job. Is it permissible for him to eat $60 worth of produce? And the Gemara basically said, the Mishnah says, Malam den asa adam shlo ye rav san ye sos me sa pasach bifanav. We counsel workers like, hey, it's just imprudent for you to eat so much on the job because no one's going to want to hire a worker who eats all their food, right? Now, the Gemara says that this melamdin, whether or not we counsel the worker this way, is a machlokas between the Chachamim and the Tanakama. The Gemara says, Ikemenai va melamdin, Tanakama lesle melamdin, or Rabbanon isluhu melamdin. So the machlokas Tanayim, whether or not we actually counsel the worker not to eat more than his schar. What's this machlokas about? Shabbani Yonasan says, Baliva de Tanakama aser lelamed oso, afilu bederech etza, Sha'in lanu lak or mashen itstavenu min ha'Torah, v'ha'Torah zichsalo. So by the way, again, Shua, you see that this phrase of zichzalo, you know, sounds much more entitlement-esque rather than mere license. Right? Zichzalo sounds like, you know, almost actually interesting what exactly the subject of this plus is. Like the food. But either way, the Rimelu Neil seems to think that there's an isser on a third party to interfere with the Poel's zchus. And that gives rise to this prohibition on counseling him, shelo lechel yoser mischaro, which I think is really interesting because it's one thing to say that the Poel has a liberty right to eat, to borrow the Zohar Rekia's formulation. It's a matir on what would otherwise be gezel. Something else to say, the balabayis has a duty to lohaniach es hapoel lechel. This expands the scope of duty bearers to even just, you know, people in the right nearby proximity, which I think is fascinating. Gabe, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I didn't like your reading of this in the parentheses. I thought that the isser here is lachar davar min haTorah. There's like some general isser about sort of undermining the binding power of a Torah law, and that the isser here isn't midin chasima, although I think it is a better read of the Tisbih read.
Okay, but I would just push back, Gabe, for a second and say, well, I was going to push back for a second and say the Torah principle is not nekar. If all it is a chus achila, if it's just a liberty right of the poel, I mean, he doesn't have to exercise his liberty. So long as he has the liberty, the Torah is not nakar. And same, even if it's a duty on the balabayis, if the poel on his own doesn't want to exercise the right, you're not oker din Torah. To put it differently, right, there's a distinction between, let's say, having the right and exercising it. You can have a right to abortion without exercising that right. You could have a right to healthcare without being sick and exercising the right. And so the point here is the Torah is mizake zechuyos, and that's not compromised if the poel decides to not assert it. So to me, the thing that's gotta be oker the din Torah is the fact that, right, there's a party out there that's somehow trying to interfere with the, right, meddling with the right in some way. And isn't that
happening though to some extent? If we, meaning I guess Beit Din, teach you to not exercise your right, doesn't at some point like all that education lead to you effectively being prevented through that education?
Right. Right. So I guess if there's a right to abortion, but you know, everyone's protesting in front of the Planned Parenthood saying, you know, you'll burn, you know, for all eternity if you abort the child. You're saying that at a certain point that actually just like infringes on the right in some way.
Yeah, like especially with like education, you know, like you're teaching the Poel, who's probably like, you know, we're teaching him specifically that he shouldn't exercise his rights.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting, Diak. I hear that. Gabe, is that what you're getting at also?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at as well.
Okay.
And your question on the general point would be equally true on the specific point. And like, this isn't really chasima if you're advising somebody to not eat food. It's hard to be mazir that as a mesuzah.
That's true. Unless, but my point is that this seems to show that part of the din achilas poel is a duty imposed on third parties to, like, you know, uphold. Like, it's not just mitzvah balabayis lohaniach. Part of the din is like mitzvah on the klal lohaniach es hapoel. So I'm trying to hammer that into the explicated duty in the first place. That's my idea, right? So that my point is, like, by analogy, like the right to abortion is also like a duty on everyone else to not meddle with people who want to get, not make it like difficult for people to get abortions, something like that. That's why I think this shows that third parties are included in the actual like din achilas poel. That's my idea. But I agree, it could be read both ways. In the Piskei Arid, I think you have a similar diuk. Latani kama lesle melamdin pirush iser nira losh en nilamdenu tarbusenu. I think it's got to be read iser nira losh en nilamdenu tarbusenu. It's a prohibition or the Tanakhama thinks that, sorry, the Mandamra thinks Melamdin, the Chachamim, think that it's a prohibition to teach them this prudential advice or this social advice because it's denira kimono milocha over al divrei Torah. Right? It sounds like you're or is preventing him or borders on preventing him from eating, and that would be a violation of divrei Torah. And other skin, I thought that was interesting for the same reason that it actually seems to extend this to third parties, which I think you wouldn't have known if this was just just a liberty right. You wouldn't have known if this was just a claim right against the Balabais, right? With the Balabais having a duty, this sounds to be like a claim right against everyone or something just much broader than that. Anybody have thoughts on this extension to the third parties?
Yeah, just like a general question. Like, you think in general, if I have a liberty or even a claim right against some other individual, that like other people can do whatever they want with regard to like that ability? There's no prohibition. There's nothing wrong with it, with interfering.
So usually, yeah, that's right. Usually, that's the case. So if you have a claim against me that I should come and shovel your, so we have a contract and I'm going to shovel your walk, right? So I have a duty owed to you. You have a claim right against me that I come and shovel. If somebody else belongs and prevents me from shoveling, that's right. They have no duty to respect the contract between the two of us. They may violate a duty to not steal my shovel if they steal my shovel, right? They may violate their duty not to puncture the tires of my car if they bust my tires and block me from coming. But there's no wrong per se in interfering with like the duty between me and you.
Isn't that like a type of like grumma of sorts?
I'll give you an example. Shua would appreciate this. There is this idea of like, tortious interference with a contract, but only if the interference is tortious, right? And like the legal standard is that the interference itself is not wrongful. The interference has to be wrongful by some method separate from the actual interference. Right? So the idea here is that in this case, it sounds like in general, I think it's true, right? There's no, if I owe a duty to you, a third party has like no shaychus to that duty. That's right. That help you on, or does that?
I guess I'm just like I'm not like disagreeing that like it's possible. I just like it seems like a little bit like my intuition is that there is like some. It wouldn't be like a strict. I don't know how to word it. It wouldn't be like a strict duty that you have, but I feel like there still is something wrong to interfere.
I think it would depend on how you interfere and exactly what way.
It just seems to me bothersome in the snow case that like knowingly I interfere with like your snowmobile guy, the snow remover guy, like there's nothing wrong with that. That seems to me very unintuitive.
Yeah.
All right, like if there's any, yeah.
Well, you notice in this case, right? It's a machlokas about melamdim or ein melamdim, right? So the Tanakhama and the other day in the Mishnah just disagree about it. The Tanakhama and the Chachamim disagree about it, which is fine. But it sounds like they're disagreeing about the scope of the third party obligation. Okay, so I think we should stop here. Let me just say, it doesn't make sense to start here for 2 minutes on the next part of the sugya. So let me just say what I want to do. Next time I wanted to spend, let's say, part of the Chabura on these Mikoros on Tashlumen below on Losachsum Shor Bedisho. Because I think that's going to be a very helpful paradigm for the Tashlumen in our case of Zchus Chilas Poel. So look at those Makoros there. It's like a nice few Makoros, not so long. And then I think we should get in. Yeah, so basically go down to page 12. And then we're going to go back. So get finished till page 12, all those discussions about Tashlumen in Chasimas Para, Losa in Chasimas Shor. And then I want to move to this, like the literally like the scope of his zechus in terms of what things is he allowed to eat, what's he allowed to do to sweeten the food, to give more content to the nature of his zechus. I have to make a decision whether it makes sense for us to talk about the honorary article and the Red Blythe article before, like, we do that discussion of Heck Ifs Plus Hapoel. Any of you have thoughts on that, whether we should talk about that before? Or there's some really good stuff there. Anybody have a preference? No? So,
I prefer if we did the poll stuff.
Say it again, Zakaria?
I prefer if we did the poll stuff first. I don't know.
Anyway. Okay, good. Yeah, so let's do the Sigya stuff first, and afterwards we'll talk about Honoré. You'll see, I think Honoré is like a little bit like Hofeld in that he gives us the terminology to more precisely characterize the different incidents of ownership. So let me just think more about how I want to do the presentation, whether it makes sense to be armed with that machinery first, or look at the sugya and then figure out how the machinery will help us. All right, great. Yashkoch, everyone. This is excellent. So I'll see you all on Thursday. Yashkoch, everyone.